Cuban media is reporting that Cuban doctors restored the eyesight of a man who executed Ernesto Che Guevara 40 years ago. Mario Terán, a Bolivian army surgeon in 1967, underwent cataract surgery in Bolivia under a Cuban program that offers free eye care in Latin America. Though the surgery took place last year, Cuban media reported the story in the lead-up to the 40th anniversary commemoration plans for Che on the island nation. After successfully participating in the Cuban Revolution as a comandante, Che went on first to the Congo and then to Bolivia to spread armed rebellion. His career as a revolutionary came to an end after being captured on October 8, 1967, by the Bolivian army. He was executed the very next day. In the decades that have followed, Che has endured as a symbol of struggle in an unjust world. While the symbolic and political dimension of Che's legacy has been given ample attention, the focus on his historical record as a comandante has not. Uprising producer Gabriel San Roman spoke with Paul J. Dosal, professor of history at the University of South Florida and author of Comandante Che, which highlights Ernesto Guevara's historical record as a guerrilla soldier, commander, and strategist.
When speaking about Comandante Che, he became that person when Fidel promoted him through the ranks of the guerrilla army. But the discussion precedes that. Tell our listeners about the master-apprentice experience of Ernesto Guevara and Alberto Bayo in Mexico before the launching of the Cuban Revolution and with specifics to guerrilla warfare.
Sure. Of course, Che Guevara had no formal military training until that time. He was fortunate enough to meet some of the Cuban exiles while they were in Mexico City, and there he decided to join up with their rebel cause. And as a result, he would soon find himself under the apprenticeship of Alberto Bayo, a veteran of the Spanish Civil War on the Republican side, who had experience in the theory and even practice of guerrilla warfare. Probably more important was that Bayo was familiar with the history of Sandino's rebellion in Nicaragua in the late 20s and early 1930s. And that's important because to Bayo, Sandino was one of the founders of modern guerrilla warfare in Latin America. So through Bayo, Che learned about the strategies and tactics of Sandino, who sort of learned the virtues of fighting in unconventional warfare under fire in Nicaragua, where, of course, he went up against U.S. Marines. He had to learn, for example, how to avoid frontal engagements with an army that was supported by air power. And so Sandino quickly learned the value of fighting in an unconventional way, avoiding the enemy's strength, selecting the time and place of an attack, and so forth. And Bayo sort of then transmitted all of this to Che. And so in many ways, Che is the son or grandson, sort of ideologically speaking, in guerrilla warfare.
And he took those ideas with him on the expedition, the Grandma expedition, to Cuba. But the first attack of the Cuban Revolution was a conventional attack because Fidel wasn't as warm to the ideas of guerrilla warfare as Che was. Let's talk about the anatomy of the campaign in the Sierra Maestra in the Cuban Revolution and where Comandante Che, in particular with his ideas in Mexico, his training, really helped to bring the triumph of the guerrilla campaign in Cuba and bring about the triumph of the Cuban Revolution.
Fidel Castro's first two military adventures were both fiascos. They were poorly planned and executed and had nothing to do with guerrilla warfare. And I'm talking here about the attack on the Moncada Army Barracks in 1953, and then his attempt to invade Cuba in a rather conventional fashion in early December 1956. Both of these led to near disastrous results for the rebel army. And only after that second disaster, the landing of the Cuban rebels in December 1956, which was followed then by the near annihilation of Castro's rebel army a few days later, only then did Castro start to embrace the strategies and tactics of guerrilla warfare. And as he did so, as he moved more toward guerrilla warfare as a strategy for his insurrection, he moved closer and closer toward Che Guevara, who was an advocate of this as a result of his apprenticeship under Alberto Bayo. And so what we see evolving in early 1957 is a closer relationship between Fidel and Che. At the same time, we see Castro's strategy evolving more toward unconventional warfare. And he was doing this, of course, under duress. He had to do this because his army was reduced to 16 men. They were poorly armed and equipped. So they really had no choice but to fight an unconventional war against a much superior force and slowly grow their army. And as they did so, then Che becomes one of Fidel's closest confidants because he leans more and more on him for military advice, where to attack, how to attack, and so forth. And we see them emerging as a powerful team, with Che more and more involved with the military side of things and Fidel handling the political and diplomatic side of the insurrection. So Che, by late 57, is really Castro's top military commander. He was the first one to be promoted to independent military command. And then, of course, in the summer of 1958, when Fidel finally decided to launch an invasion of central Cuba, he turned first, of course, to Che Guevara, not his brother Raul, who was also an independent command at the time, but he trusted and valued Che's military leadership more even than his brother Raul. So then Che led a campaign across the island, set up another front in central Cuba, and there he would achieve his greatest victory, which was the taking of the city of Santa Clara in late December 58, which essentially cut the island in two and spelled the doom for Fulgencio Batista and his regime.
Now that battle of Santa Clara, which is the subject of songs and a deep point in Cuban history, was actually a conventional attack, was it not? But that fit within the overall theory of guerrilla warfare, that once you had built the guerrilla campaign to such a point, then a conventional attack could be successful, correct?
Absolutely. And so Che's greatest military victory was a conventional one. And this is not so widely understood or appreciated. It's his march across the island, followed by his very systematic encirclement of Santa Clara, that brought the revolution to victory. And it was all done in a rather classical campaign, and Che was at the time reading some classical military accounts. And yes, indeed, he was following this strategy because he recognized that at that time, at that stage in the insurrection, the forces had accumulated enough strength so that they could take the war to the cities and to do so in a conventional manner.
Now, I want to take this time to remind our listeners that on the phone with me is Paul J. Dosal, a professor of history at the University of South Florida and author of the book Comandante Che, Guerrilla Soldier, Commander, and Strategist, 1956 to 1967. Now, I want to turn to Che's other military campaigns. The first one after the Cuban Revolution and after he had served as a member of the Cuban government was the Congo. And he, in his diary, characterized that campaign as a history of a failure. How and why did that campaign fail? And what lessons would Che carry with him to his next guerrilla campaign in Bolivia?
To understand the Congo campaign as well as the campaign in Bolivia, we have to take into account his tricontinental strategy, wherein he thought the best and most efficient way of defeating Yankee imperialism. And we always have to remember that was his enemy, that was his main objective, to defeat American imperialism. To do so, he wanted to launch wars of national liberation on three continents simultaneously. This is where he's learned the lessons of Vietnam already, and this is only 1965, but he can see that Vietnam is going badly for the Americans, that they're being drawn into an unpopular war, often fought by unconventional methods in Vietnam, and that it was causing political and economic trouble for the United States at home. So then what he wanted to do was to promote a similar insurrection or regional war in Africa and South America. thinking that if he could get the United States sucked into regional wars on three continents simultaneously, he would drain the United States of its resources, of its will to fight, and that ultimately popular insurrections in all three regions would eventually triumph. So that's the strategy he took with him to the Congo, but it relied heavily on the support of China and the Soviet Union. He expected both communist superpowers to support these wars of national liberation. What he found out, however, even before he went to the Congo, was that they were not ready to engage the United States in this manner. In fact, the Soviet Union was pursuing a détente. They wanted to normalize relations with the United States and lessen tensions. Che, on the other hand, at the time, wanted to intensify the war, wanted to continue the fight against imperialism, and he was so determined to do so, he went to the Congo even though he knew that the Soviets and the Chinese did not support them. If he had had that support, the Congolese campaign might have turned out differently, but as it happened, he went there and found that he had chosen the wrong country, the wrong leadership. His timing was off, and that his authority wasn't even respected by the Congolese rebel leaders. And one of the lessons then he took from the Congo was that if and when he appeared in the field again, that he would insist on having complete military and political authority. And that is going to play an important role in shaping the outcome in Bolivia, where he insisted on having that full command authority.
Now let's turn next to the Bolivian FOCO. With respect to the Bolivian campaign, let's talk about the problems of that campaign and the anatomy of defeat in that campaign, just as we spoke about the anatomy of victory in the Cuban Revolution.
There are so many different aspects of this to explain the failure in Bolivia. And one of them is certainly setting up the insurrectionary forces. And Che would find, although he never probably recognized it, that he didn't have the political diplomatic skills that had served Fidel and the Cuban revolutionaries so well in their fight against Batista. He was much better as a military commander, when in the field working with small units. Che was at his best. But in dealing with the larger political aspects of the struggle, which are absolutely critical, he was not so good. And so it never got off to a good start in Bolivia. His only possible ally there was the Bolivian Communist Party, led by Mario Monge. And just 2 months after Che arrived there in Bolivia, the two men had a falling out, partly because Che insisted on complete political and military authority, and Monge wouldn't yield that authority to Che. So the result was that Che's guerrillas, as expert they were in military affairs, lacked the infrastructure support in the cities that they needed so badly to stay in the field.
Definitely, that's one major thing, and it actually goes back to the kind of the Sierra Llano connection of the Cuban Revolution was not there in Bolivia. But in continuance, there was, I remember when I read the Bolivian diary, there was a point in which Che said if he had 100 more men, and the political situation being what it was at that point in time, that he might have won the campaign, or that may have been a turning point. Do you agree that there was a potential for a victory?
I don't think so, for reasons that Che probably didn't understand. The political aspect was probably underestimated by Che, and that's one important thing. He did have this great faith in the military struggle being able to create the political conditions necessary for success. That is, yes, indeed. If he had 100 good men out in the field and they scored some victories over the Bolivian army, that then they might generate some political support in the cities. On the other hand, what I find interesting about the Bolivian campaign is that while we often talk about it as a failure for Che, right, that's the only way people can understand it. This man is supposed to be a great guerrilla commander. He's the best Latin America ever produced. We never talk about it as a success for either the Bolivian army or the CIA. And I think that's another way to look at it. I think Che was up against forces that he didn't understand. He was up against technological superiority that he didn't understand. And so the enemy in the field, he underestimated always. They weren't the same army that he fought in Cuba, which was totally unprepared for counterinsurgency. But the one he found in Bolivia did have some training, and it was well advised by the CIA.
Now, I have one more question on Bolivia. There is a persistent view that I encounter quite often that that being Che was betrayed by Fidel in the Bolivian campaign. You argue against that view briefly in your book. Tell us why you do so.
Well, the whole Bolivian campaign was conceived and initiated by Che with the full support and encouragement of Fidel and the entire secret apparatus of Cuba. There's no way that Che could have sent 40-something men from Cuba to southeastern Bolivia without the full support of the Americas Department back in Cuba. So he had that support to begin with. And once he's in the field, I think there was very little that Fidel or anybody could have done to save Che. Once Che's out there, he's on his own. And he did receive communications, and he received funds from Cuba. He was well positioned for victory. So I just doubt that there was much Fidel could have done one way or the other to affect the outcome of Bolivia. Sure, the two men had their disputes. There was tensions between them. And Fidel probably wanted Che to move on to other fields of interest. But I don't yet see any evidence to persuade me that Fidel betrayed him, that somehow he led the CIA to pinpoint Che's location and all that. I think the CIA did that on its own. They didn't need Fidel's help for that. The eavesdropping techniques that the CIA and the NSA had developed by this time were quite capable of pinpointing Che. Fidel didn't need to do anything to help them out.
And that's Uprising producer Gabriel San Roman speaking with Paul J. Dosal, professor of history at the University of South Florida and author of Comandante Che. You can hear the entire interview on our website, www.uprisingradio.org.